Welcome to season 4 of the Fit Farming Food Mom podcast. I am your host, Connie, world champion powerlifter, former bodybuilder, and elite trainer and nutrition coach. As a movement enthusiast and health nerd, I'm here on this show to speak with educated guests as we dive into the realm of all things health, fitness, mindset, and everything in between. If you enjoy the show, please do me a huge favor by smashing the like button or subscribing and leaving me a review. Now let's get to the show. Hi guys, welcome back to another episode. I hope you enjoyed my previous episode with Jeff Sue. I just want to say I got so many comments and messages from you guys telling me how impactful that episode was, and it was amazing to hear feedback about that. So thank you again. If you did like that episode, please go leave a review on iTunes. Those reviews help other people find the podcast and are really, really important. Today, I get to skip some of my intro because I have Rob Wolf joining me. He is the founder of LMNT Electrolytes. He talks a little bit about how they got started, but most importantly, we dive into the mechanisms as to which they are important and how they influence your health. So really good episode. I always like having Rob on the show. It's been about a year and a half. We talked about the paleo diet and lots of training stuff previously. And so getting him on to talk about his product, and not just his product, but why it's so important to have sodium in your diet. So if you want to get yourself some of these electrolytes that are clean, and we talk all about that on the show today, you can pop on over to drinklmnt.com/Connie and get yourself some electrolytes. But before I introduce Rob, I'm just going to go ahead and jump into the show because he tells his story and it's an awesome one. Enjoy the show. All right, Rob, I'm super excited to have you back on the show. I had you on quite some time ago. I feel like it was over a year or a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And we hit it off pretty good, chatted about all the good things, right? Paleo, health, mindset, body composition, you name it. And so everybody knows that I am a huge fan of LMNT. I preach it to the world. People probably think I'm crazy or something like that, right? But it's the truth, right? Everybody thinks that they need Gatorade to replenish their electrolytes, when in fact Gatorade really doesn't even have any electrolytes in it. It's just full of sugar. But I'm like the LMNT lady. I show up to soccer practice with a bunch of water bottles for the kids, and then a box of LMNT because I don't want to be feeding. I mean, I get these kids eat all this sugar, but I'm like, the less impact, the better. So I'm that person. So today we're going to talk a little bit about that, why it's important, the mechanisms in which it's important, and all of that fun stuff.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I mean, for the guy who co-founded the electrolyte company, of course, I'm going to have like a glowing review about, you know, why electrolytes are important. But I maybe a little bit of the Genesis story might help with that. Like as we talked about on the first show that I got to hang out with you, I got into this because of some really complex gut and autoimmune issues. I had ulcerative colitis so bad that I nearly died from it. I was facing surgery and immunosuppressant drugs. I'm 5'9". I'm 165 pounds. I'm in decent shape for an old guy. I turned 51 in a couple of weeks here and everything. But at the low ebb of my ulcerative colitis, I was still 5'9", but I was 125, 130 pounds. So if you imagine like 40 pounds less of me, like I'm not a big guy as it is. I was in pretty dire straits, you know, and this kind of low carb paleo, autoimmune paleo type of eating is what I've been doing the last 23 years. And it for sure saved my life. My gut health is far from perfect, but it's so immeasurably better than what it was. Like it's a miracle, you know, and I meet people all the time. I know two people I've become really close with at jiu-jitsu that ended up with J pouches because they had the surgery, and, you know, and then they met me and they're like, oh God, you had exactly the same thing I have, only their doctors didn't give them this out of, you know, potential nutritional modifications. Now they have this completely life altering surgery, and people can motor through that just fine. But it's like, both of these guys have been like, God damn it, I wish I had had that opportunity to just kick the tires on that, you know? Mm-hmm. So this I have to eat on the lower carb side of things. I have to really be careful with fermentable fibers. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, you know, even though fiber is supposed to be like the thing for everybody, for me, this is just something that I've learned over time that like I can have some, but I can't have a lot. I can have it in a dose, but having it serially over multiple days can be a problem. And it you know, I'm kind of just the reason why it, to the degree I'm good at this stuff is all is because I keep trying to figure out my own problem. And I'm kind of like the most complex pain in the ass client that I've ever had, you know, and then overlaid with this gut and autoimmune stuff, I've been into things like CrossFit and Thai boxing and jujitsu. And so it would have been easier, arguably, if I had just lifted weights or just been like an endurance athlete, because this low carb way of eating, I think you can make that work for like just weightlifting or you know, really aerobic based, you know, lower intensity activity. But I'm doing this stuff that is like right in that like glycolytic hell kind of thing, and fueling it with a diet that isn't particularly high carb, you know, is generally quite low carb. And I've had a lot of problems with that, just recovery and you know, being able to have decent work output. And it was like 5 years ago, I just kept poking around. But I was looking around for examples of folks who were eating low carb, specifically they were claiming to be ketogenic and doing jujitsu and doing it at a high level. And what was kind of crazy was that I mainly found women, because, you know, low carb is supposed to be this like absolute bugaboo for women, which the funny thing is I see women both crater on low carb and succeed better on low carb. So I see both ends of the spectrum. You know, I see it work best for them. I also see it break them, which I think most of the breaking is because of inadequate protein and electrolytes. And hopefully I'll remember to circle back into that. But I bumped into some folks that these women primarily who are doing jujitsu, doing it at a high level, eating low carb. And when I started really digging into what they were doing, they were consuming a ton of sodium, like anywhere from like 5 to 10 grams of sodium, 5 to 10,000 milligrams of sodium per day. And as I was talking to their coaches, I was like, well, I salt my food really well, so I should be okay. And I think their coaches, like, they rolled their eyes so hard that like their head probably almost like fell off their neck, because of like, oh God, I've only heard this like a thousand times. And it took me like a year of fiddling and hanging out with these folks till finally one day one of the coaches is Luis Villasenor. He was like, hey man, why don't you just record everything you're eating, everything you're supplementing, put it in chronometer, and let's just see where you're at. Like, we'd like to see you at least 5 grams of sodium a day, maybe more. And when I did that, lo and behold, I was barely even getting 2 grams of sodium, you know, because I eat minimally processed food, even though I eat like some salted food here and there. Like I just wasn't doing it in a concerted enough way to really get some benefit from there. So he did something crazy. He's like, let's do an experiment. Do you have any pickle juice? Yes, I had pickle juice. Okay, go get like 6 or 8 ounces of it. Sip on that before your next workout and then tell me how that goes. And like for the first time in 15 years, I actually got a pump while working out. Like usually low carb athletics, you're just flat. You don't get a pump. You don't get vascular and everything. And I was like, holy shit. Like I feel great. And then I remember that night, my HRV score went up by like 20 points or something. Like it was crazy. And he's like, yeah, he reminded me about this thing called the diuresis of fasting. When you're low carb or fasting, we tend to have low insulin levels. Those low insulin levels downregulate a hormone called aldosterone. And when we have low aldosterone, we don't retain sodium. We just shed water like crazy. And then we start shedding potassium. And it's this horrible downward spiral. Like people feel like garbage. This is kind of what they call the keto flu. Mm-hmm. Only it doesn't go away if you're low carb or fasting a lot, or even just athletic and eating a clean diet. You have very low insulin levels. And so you have a tendency to not retain a ton of sodium, which from a blood pressure standpoint is kind of good. You're probably not going to give yourself cardiovascular disease because of all that. Mm-hmm. But from a health and performance perspective, more short term, it's really problematic. So I got all excited about electrolytes, specifically sodium. And we put together this backing up a little bit, when I looked out at the community of folks that I serve and I was looking at the problems they had, sleep disturbances, difficulty with recovery, poor performance, you know, amenorrhea type things with women, I was like, oh my God, I think that like 95% of this is from lack of electrolytes, specifically sodium. So we put together this free downloadable guide. We called it KetoAid, make your own KetoAid. And it's like this much table salt, this much potassium chloride from no salt, some magnesium citrate, lemon juice, stevia, water, shake it up and go. And people loved it. Like, and we didn't use it as a lead magnet or anything. We just were like, go, you know, use this thing. And in 6 months, we had 500,000 downloads of this thing. Like, it was crazy. And folks were raving about how awesome they felt, how much better they were sleeping, how improved their recovery was. But they were really bummed about traveling with 3 bags of white powder because TSA didn't really like that, you know? And so did you guys ever think about maybe putting some sort of a convenient like scooper or stick pack thing together? And that was the whole genesis for Element, honest to God. Like it started off as like me kind of unfucking my ignorance around low carb and electrolytes, and then realizing, oh my goodness, this group of people that I serve probably suffer largely the same problems that I did. Here's this free solution, like brew your own electrolytes at home. And then we got just, I mean, we were tagged on social media like crazy, just people asking, like, would you guys ever consider putting together an electrolyte formula? And so we looked into it. And when I really looked critically at the formulation, I'm like, to your point about Gatorade, funny story about Gatorade. if you go to the Gatorade Hall of Fame there at Florida State University, and you look at some of the first packages of Gatorade, it had a gram of sodium per serving. In the beginning, it was more sodium, less sugar. And over time, it's become far less sodium and much more sugar. And and there's a whole, you know, crazy backstory to that. But I looked at this stuff with a pretty fresh set of eyes. And I was just like, okay, we need way more sodium. We definitely need some potassium and a little bit of magnesium to fill some gaps. But like the real concern is sodium, particularly for low carb folks, for really active folks. When we sweat, 99.8% of the electrolyte that we lose is sodium chloride. We don't lose potassium through the sweat. Very, very little. I mean, minuscule amounts. So the thing that folks really needed was sodium. And also, interestingly, when people are deficient in sodium, it's difficult for them to maintain potassium levels. Whereas if they consume adequate sodium, they will tend to retain adequate potassium. Like the sodium intake is kind of like the keystone or the linchpin. Like if that's right, everything else has a tendency to work out. Whereas if you're deficient in sodium, it's almost impossible to make everything else work. And then we started looking at some of like Dr. Tim Noakes's work. Like he wrote a book called Waterlogged, where people, unfortunately, for like the last 40 years, when they get ready to do a marathon or a triathlon or something like that, like they're just hammering straight water. And they end up inducing hyponatremia. Yep. And these people have died from that. They get hospitalized and died and whatnot. So I think I'm just jabbering like an idiot now, but that's like the genesis story for Element and where this stuff came from. And it was honestly really trying to address my own problems. And then when I figured out, like I'm good at the biochemistry, but it's funny, the electrolyte story just never got on my radar. It was never a thing. My wife competed in the CrossFit Games years ago and she got 13th place, but she was so crushed after that, like kind of adrenal fatigue type deal. We did no electrolyte management with her at all. Like none. It wasn't on my radar at all. Like I think maybe we had a little bit of Pedialyte in the mix or something, but it was so not on our radar. And had it been like it I think it she could have been like top five or something like that. So people very near me have both I and other people have suffered from my ignorance, and then hopefully I'm making up for that on the back end of all this.
That's kind of funny that you say all that, Rob, because you know how our mess becomes our message, literally. Like everybody, and you love to hear this, like you actually have a really big education. Your education is in biochemistry, isn't it? So you have this, right? But people ask all the time, they're like, what's your education? And it's like, the School of Hard Knocks. I don't know what to tell you, because I can't tell you that I have used, I mean, I maybe used my education a little bit, but for the most part, it's been through experimentation. And this might sound terrible, but through me or my clients or people around me figuring out not only my own body, but everybody else's, right? And by getting in touch with people like yourself, or I have a great circle of people that are all into this kind of stuff and into hacking themselves and sharing their discoveries. And it has just opened up a whole new world of education for all of these things that are going on.
Yeah, I Charles Poliquin always said that coaches are at least 20 years ahead of what the academics are. And that mainly the academics, when they get ideas for research, it's because they're like looking at what the coaches are doing, and they're like, okay, we'll do a study around this. And the coaches have empirically usually figured it out, whether it's, you know, messing around with like sodium bicarbonate for like acid base buffering and stuff like that, or, you know, whatever the deal is. But coaches are interesting in that ostensibly we get paid to get results for people. And you can't just like, you can't really fake that too much. You know, it's kind of like,
right. Well, you know, that's the funniest part about it, right? It's like, I remember doing all my nutrition schooling, and it's like, oh, for X amount, X person is 25 years old. Like, it gives you these scenarios, right? Exercises this many times a day. Part of it is cardio. This is that. What would you do for nutrition for this person? And that, like, you had to write case studies on that, right? And they were looking for a specific answer, like plugged in like a formula. And the thing about it is, we as humans are not a formula. Like, that we do not function the same. We all have different things that are affecting us, different environments, all of these things, right? And so that's where I think there's a little bit of a fault in the education system, because you have to, not everybody is a formula.
Right. One of the best examples I have of this, and it really resonates with me, it may not make sense for other people, but like caffeine tolerance. So there's this concept called half-life in toxicology. Like, if I consume a chemical, a drug like caffeine, the half-life is like how long it takes for me to metabolize 100 milligrams down to 50 milligrams, then 50 milligrams down to 25 milligrams, basically how long it takes to cut the amount of the stuff in your system in half. If we look at the bell curve of humans, the average within humans for the half-life of caffeine is 8 hours. But there are some people who are fast metabolizers who clear it in 4 hours. And there are some people who are slow metabolizers that it's 36 hours. That's a 9x difference, basically, between fast and slow metabolizer. So if somebody says, is coffee a good idea for me, or tea, or whatever, fuck, it really depends. I mean, it really depends. The fast metabolizer can have a shot of espresso and go to bed and they're fine. The slow metabolizer had, like, they walked by an espresso machine 3 days ago and they're still wired from it, you know? Mm-hmm. And not everything in our physiology has a 9x difference on it, but there's a remarkable number of things that are like that. And so when people get tribal about like low carb or high carb or this thing or that thing, like, if they remember a little bit about like this caffeine metabolism, it's like there's a massive variation. There's a huge difference. And the only way generally that you figure that out, like some genetic testing that might figure it out, but you tinker and experiment. And usually having a coach is the fastest way to ferret that stuff out, because a coach is a natural scientist. Coaches, you set up A-B testing all the time when you're like, okay, somebody wants a bigger back squat, or they want to improve their 40-yard dash or their mile time or whatever. Okay, well, we're going to start doing this and then we should see this result. And if you start doing this and you don't see that result, you see kind of the opposite. You're like, oh shit, okay, well, we need to change directions on this. And so as awesome as like all the peer-reviewed evidence-based material is that we have at our fingertips now, you have to kind of use that as a little bit of background information to then formulate a plan and then try to help people, you know? So yeah, and this is why it's great chatting with you, because you're in the trenches, in the front line, coaching people every day. So like, this stuff is just fresh and consistent. And the hundreds and thousands of people that you interface with, they're almost like your, they're like a search algorithm, because they're out in the interwebs, they're out poking around. They're like, Connie, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And you're like, well, I've never heard of that. Let's dig into this, you know? And
Yeah. And I mean, it's all about experimentation too, right? I know it was kind of funny because for a while there, I had people calling me the keto lady, and I've never been the keto lady, but I wanted to, I had some things in my training that were going to change that left me an opportunity to actually experiment with it myself, because you can't bash something unless you've fully tried it, right? And back then I was kind of in the bodybuilding realm where, oh, you're going to roast off all your muscle if you are keto and all the things, right? And so I had an opportunity that sprung up and I was like, I'm going to take this opportunity and I'm going to try keto. And it ended up being one of the best things I ever did try. Like it was really, it was really great. It was a great reset for my body. I started really getting diving into like the cyclical part of it where you can like load and still stay in ketosis. And I was doing a lot of cycling at the time. And so lots of endurance stuff, but I had to kind of tap into like more of a Maffetone type training to make sure that I was at certain heart rates. I had a continuous glucose monitor. I turned myself into a science experiment, right? So now when I hear people talk smack about keto, I'm like, well, hold on. There's certain applications. They're like, well, why don't you still do it? I'm like, because right now the kind of training that I do does not necessarily support a ketogenic diet. Could I modify it? Yes. Is it optimal? No. So I need to do something a little bit different. So I think these all have certain applications for certain environments. And that's all things we have to keep in mind.
Yeah. You know, a hammer is awesome for driving a nail into a piece of wood. You can use a drill to hammer a nail into a piece of wood, but it's really not the best tool. You could use a bandsaw to do it also, but it's like, this is another one of these things. And I get it. Like there are different folks around, and like early in this stuff, I was pretty religious about paleo, keto, low carb, because it saved my life. I was working and I've continued to work with people. My little cross-section of stuff tends to be folks who have complex gut and autoimmune issues. Mm-hmm. They maybe have weight and metabolic issues too. I think you can fix weight and metabolic issues almost any way that you can figure out a way to reduce caloric intake. Like that is, I wouldn't say easy, but it's easier than when somebody has really complex gut issues. A high carb diet isn't going to work. Like I've been throwing out this bet to some pretty big name people. I'm like, hey, you get 100 people, I'll get 100 people. We identify what their issues are. They're all autoimmune gut related. You do your process with them. I do my process, and whoever produces a better process, the other person has to close up shop and leave the internet forever. Mm-hmm. And like, nobody's willing to take this bet. And it's totally a loaded bet. Like, because I'm stacking the deck in my favor, because this is just an area that I'm really good at. And I would argue that there are far fewer tools to deal with complex gut and autoimmune issues than there is with getting somebody lean. Like if you want to get somebody lean and maintain muscle mass, you can probably do it vegan. You can probably do it Mediterranean. You could do it high carb. You could do it low carb. Like there's a bunch of different tracks to that. But if somebody has some really complex gut and autoimmune issues, I've been around this enough that like you just have very few tools. And so those tools do become kind of religious icons in a way. It's like, it's the one, you know, it is the grail. It is the one way through. And for those individual folks, that may be true. More broadly, it's not. And I think that that's where folks outside of, you know, I don't have ulcerative colitis, I don't have rheumatoid arthritis, I just want to get leaner, they don't necessarily need that stringency to it. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I want to talk about a couple things in reverse that you mentioned there. So you mentioned sleep problems and all of this kind of thing. So that it definitely, I wanted to bring a point up to this. So in the bodybuilding realm, which is where I originate at, and I do hang out there a lot. I'm kind of like a split personality, in case anybody hasn't figured this out. I like live in two different realms. Okay. Now about three, but in the bodybuilding realm, these people are terrified of sodium, and you look and you think at how many health issues they have. They have high blood pressure. They have the insomnia, amenorrhea, you named several of them, right? And they're like, oh, that's normal. That's whatever. But then they're not, you have to sleep to recover. It's like this vicious cycle, right? Mm-hmm. You have to sleep to recover. You have all these impactful health things. And really, sodium is not making you fat. So
it's not even making you retain water the way that people think it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So that's huge. I'd like to kind of dive into a couple of those things, because I can tell you several instances where I've had a new client start with me. Obviously, I don't throw the whole book at them the first time, you know, and you'll get someone that even is dealing with something such as fatigue or feeling maybe a little lightheaded or not feeling well. And I'm like, well, you know, how much sodium are you getting in? How many electrolytes are you getting in? And I'm telling you, I have a monthly subscription with you guys. I always have a whole closet full of electrolytes. So here I am like Santa Claus of LMNT, right?
And right,
so,
right.
So I always get these new clients and they're sitting in my chair right here. And I'm like, try this in your water the next couple of days, see how you feel. And almost immediately they're like, oh, my energy is so much better. So can you explain a little bit of that to our audience?
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think of the best way to dive in on this. At a really basic level, like literally every nerve impulse, muscle contraction in our body, like the action potential of firing a muscle, firing a nerve, it's driven by sodium potassium pumps, like at a basic level. If the level of sodium and potassium get off in our bodies by just a little bit, we feel horrible. And if it gets off by a little bit more, we die. The only thing, the most tightly regulated processes in the body are pH and electrolyte balance. Mm-hmm. And both of those, like a little variation up, a little variation down, and you feel horrible and or can die. And so, and the body will go through really remarkable lengths to try to normalize this stuff. And maybe talking about like the, I think it, maybe beyond the physique side of things, but people are really concerned about sodium because of cardiovascular disease and its association with high blood pressure. And sodium is definitely associated with that. It's definitely a player in hypertension. The problem, though, is that it's a bystander. And I'm going to make that kind of, usually I kind of hem and haw and try to not make emphatic statements, because I feel like the internet and our world at large has just become like, this is the way. But I really feel like the insulin resistance is the underlying mechanism that's driving cardiovascular disease from the hypertensive perspective.
100%.
So we get insulin resistant, and we tend to upregulate the production of a hormone called aldosterone. It goes the exact opposite of what happens in that like naturesis of fasting. And when we produce more aldosterone, we retain sodium. And this is when we retain too much sodium in that hyperinsulinemic, hypertensive state, then it raises the fluid volume in our circulatory system. It raises our blood pressure. Abnormally high blood pressure causes the contraction of the heart to not move in a smooth laminar flow. It creates turbulent flow, and the turbulent flow appears to damage the arterial beds. And this could be some of the underlying mechanism in starting the atherosclerotic plaquing and, you know, beginning of heart disease. And it damages the kidneys, and it predisposes our brains to thrombic stroke. And like, it's really bad stuff. So if we just limit sodium, it fixes the problem. No, it doesn't. That's the crazy thing. And there have been great studies done on this where they put folks, these are, metabolic ward, very tightly controlled, adequately powered, like ticks all the boxes. You put people with hypertension on low sodium diets, and the blood pressure goes down a little bit. I'm not saying that a person with high blood pressure benefits from higher sodium, although I'll mention a sideline to that. But what happens is, even in a low sodium environment, the body starts producing cortisol and aldosterone and adrenaline. All those things tend to cause us to retain any sodium we have in the diet. And we also pull sodium out of our bones. And when we pull sodium out of our bones, we also pull calcium out of the bones. Mm-hmm. And when we mine the calcium and the sodium out of our bones, that calcium that we pull out helps to calcify the plaques in our arteries. So it's like this horrible downward spiral. And there's this really tight association between atherosclerotic plaquing and this kind of low sodium intake. So we have another situation where some people, it's like 10% of hypertensives, when they add sodium to their diet, they actually normalize their blood pressure because they're in this stressed state because of low sodium. So for like figure competitors and more physique oriented folks, you start noting like this is where even like a weekly check-in on your heart rate variability and your sleep quality and stuff like that. If you see some trends where you're not recovering, you're not feeling good, if you see anything like amenorrhea and whatnot, addressing sodium could be a really important piece to that, because if we are deficient in sodium, you will see an uptick in all of these stress hormones, because those stress hormones cause us to retain whatever sodium we have around. If we consume adequate sodium, then it tends to tell the body, okay, we don't need to be stressed out. We don't need elevated cortisol and adrenaline, and we can actually sleep and recover and whatnot. And so you usually get this really profound shift in the way that people sleep and recover. And then from that, just like physique perspective of walking around, if you have adequate sodium, sodium tends to exist outside of cells and potassium tends to exist inside of cells. And if you have the right ratio and you want to look vascular and lean, that's actually what you want to do. Like Bill Phillips is kind of famous back in the old Body for Life days, where he would do a little bit of sodium, a little bit of creatine, and a little bit of alcohol to shift the partitioning of fluids for like a photo shoot. But if people are just adequately hydrated, which hydration doesn't mean water, it means water and electrolytes. If you're adequately hydrated to whatever degree of leanness you have, you will look maximally vascular and lean for that moment. And less sodium isn't always the way to get there. Like you need the right amount for you to kind of look optimized there.
And that's actually something that I do with my competitors, is we actually load with LMNT, actually. I have it down to a science pretty much at this point, loading with electrolytes and not flushing, because a lot of in the bodybuilding realm, which is a mostly Gen Pop podcast, but I do have some competitors that listen in, they are stripping the electrolytes a week before by having their competitors drink like 2 gallons of water. And then they basically keep all of the sodium out at that point. So, cause they say then you're not going to hang on to water. Right? Right. And then they cut water and they just like, so now you are heavily dehydrated, which is then going to increase aldosterone and make your body hang on. You've got cortisol coming up. Now you're stressed cause you got a show. So you're adding cortisol to more cortisol to aldosterone, and you are actually going, you'll see a client the morning of the show, they'll wake up, I see this happen with other people's competitors, after putting them at a risk by dehydrating the crap out of them, they now wake up and they are watery as all get out because their body is scared, right? And it's retaining everything, and you can see that it's like that subcutaneous.
Yeah.
And all of that could have been prevented by just having the person drink water and not deplete, and add a little bit of like an electrolyte to actually bring everything to the surface and make that person vascular.
Yeah. And you know, the two thoughts on that. When you look back at say like the last 40 years within the bodybuilding and physique world, nobody's died from anabolic overuse. Everybody who's died in bodybuilding and physique have died from electrolyte imbalances, from like diuretics and stuff like that. So you don't want to die, it's a very easy way to kill yourself, screwing around with the electrolyte imbalances. And for folks that are kind of freaked out about this, you can field test this. And I know you do this with your clients, just playing with the electrolyte levels pregame. It's like, wow, I look really vascular and lean today with this. And it's like, okay, well, as we cut your calories and we do some other stuff to reduce the subcutaneous fat, you know that when we are dialed in on proper electrolytes, you look maximally vascular, you have better sleep and all the rest of that stuff. So you can play with this stuff ahead of time. So it's not so scary on like, game day of like, is this shit really going to work? Like you can field test it ahead of time. Yeah.
Well,
and not kill your clients.
Right. That's a bonus, right? But you see people do this all the time too. They'll put somebody on a diuretic and then cut water, and that doesn't work either, because then you're not able to fill the muscle back out you're done, right? So then this person walks on stage and they look totally flat. But I mean, that's kind of a rabbit hole, all of that kind of stuff. But you know where I'm going with it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, so I have a client and I'm going to use him as an example because this is something you can speak to, I'm sure. He was on a full ketogenic diet because he has pretty severe diabetes and he's trying to fix it naturally. He went on a ketogenic diet. This was before he got with me, and he's in this vicious circle because he's now no longer consuming carbs. He's mostly carnivore, right? But he wasn't getting enough sodium because of his high cholesterol and high blood pressure. The doctor was like, no more sodium, right? So they pulled the salt. So he was doing carnivore without getting enough of the electrolytes and sodium in. And he said, I can't sleep at night. I have to wake up and go pee like 10 times a night. And I was like, that's because you don't have enough sodium. And potassium.
Yep.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, really? So then he's in this vicious cycle, because what happens when you don't sleep? Your blood sugar gets out of control, right? Yeah. So regardless of a ketogenic diet, you now have this person that is not sleeping properly because they're waking up to go to the bathroom, not to mention all the other underlying things that would be causing, dehydration, even though you're drinking water. But then he's not sleeping. So guess what? Now his blood sugar is through the roof. It was a big vicious cycle. So almost immediately I was like, we've got to bring in some electrolytes. I know this sounds scary, but I promise you're going to be better. And his blood pressure has actually improved since we brought in electrolytes. So yeah, I can definitely understand how that could be a mechanism.
Yeah. We did a nice blog for Element, drinkelement.com/science. I think we just rejiggered the website, but we did a really deep dive, and I want to say it's like 15% of folks who are hypertensive, they're hypertensive specifically because of low sodium. And then there's another group of hypertensives that are hypertensive, arguably because of that insulin resistant aldosterone kind of thing. But it's magic. Like, you give those folks adequate sodium and like their blood pressure just like plummets. And usually it's like a tranquilizer dart. Like, it's that night, like they sleep like they've been roofied or something, you know, because they've just been under this stress, because the body upregulates the stress hormones, because cortisol retains sodium, epinephrine retains sodium, the aldosterone can retain sodium. So the body is just struggling to retain sodium by hook or by crook. And if you are low carb, then it exacerbates that scenario dramatically. It you know, let's say you're consuming kind of a modest amount of carbs, maybe like 25-30% of calories from carbs. If you go really low carb, like 10% or fewer carbs, it probably doubles your sodium needs. You know, so like if you were at 5 grams a day, you may be at 10 grams a day. And it's actually a challenge to get all of that in. You have to be smart about it.
So is there a recommendation on how much sodium someone should be bringing in? I guess, I mean, I know we're all individual, but how much would be too much, I guess? Is there a such thing as too much? And what would be your recommendation for daily intake on sodium?
That's like an awesome question. One of the most difficult ones to answer, because small female, large male, do you live in a hot, humid environment? The American Council of Sports Medicine, who is assuming like a high carb, you know, diet as part of their recommendations for athletes in hot, humid environments, they recommend 7 to 10 grams of sodium per day. And this is like very mainstream, you know, orthodox type stuff. It really varies. The way that we kind of benchmark this stuff is when we look at population-wide studies and morbidity and mortality, we see a low ebb of morbidity, mortality between 4 and 6 grams of sodium per day. That's when everybody lives the longest, has the least problems, all that type of stuff. So about 5 grams of sodium, it's really safe as a recommendation from a general health perspective. And then we need to ask some questions. Are you low carb? If you're low carb, that may double your electrolyte needs. What type of physical activity that do you do? We've done some work with some NHL players, some pretty big guys, like 200, 220 pounds, like decently large guys. these guys in a 2 hour practice or game will lose 10 pounds of water and 10 grams of wow. sodium in a 2 hour period. And so, you know, and like, it's not really precise, but I've weighed myself before and after jujitsu. I've weighed my gi before and after jujitsu. And a good session, I'll lose 6 pounds, you know, and I haven't done the, what they do with these NHL players. It's a patch that collects the sweat and it analyzes the amount of sodium. And because they know that it's like, you know, 500 centimeters of surface area, and then they're able to calculate the total surface area and everything, kind of extrapolate that. I haven't been that extensive, but on training days, I know I need about double what I do on sedentary days. And sedentary days, I probably 5 to 6 grams to kind of keep me normal. And then if I do a regular jujitsu class plus an hour or two of open mat, like I may need double and a half what I would normally need. So a sedentary day might be 5 grams. A really hard training day might be 8 to 12 grams. And I live in Montana now, which is really, you know, relatively dry and all that. The 2 years that we spent in Texas, I was just like, oh my God, because it's hot and humid always there, you know, and that further increased my sodium needs. So heat and humidity, size, activity level. Males, I would say, oftentimes need a little bit more electrolytes than females do, because females are a little bit more efficient in their sweating, mm-hmm. but there's not a 100% uniform thing with that. Trying to think of what else, but activity, size, heat, humidity. One interesting thing, because we in the Northern Hemisphere, at least, we're still in winter. Cold weather can decrease our desire for drinking fluids. And so people can end up legitimately dehydrated in that way. And I don't have any science to support the following, but we're getting a lot more anecdote, and we're actually trying to figure out how to do a study on this. But what we've noticed, just kind of anecdotally, is if somebody is low in sodium and they drink something like Element or even pickle juice for that mm-hmm. matter, they don't taste the salt. Like it doesn't taste salty. But once they've sipped on it, and then they hit a level where they're like, it just becomes kind of overwhelmingly salty. Then they're like, I think that there's a mechanism there, like some sort of a taste mechanism. When the individual is low in sodium, they don't really taste it that much in their food or beverage. And then when they start getting adequate or above adequate levels, then it starts tasting really salty and kind of uncomfortably salty. And so people slow down on it.
Okay, so this is funny that you say this, because I can't tell you how many people either A, they absolutely love Element tea, right? Or I have some clients that'll try it and they're like, it's so extremely salty, they'll tell me. And I'm like, really? It doesn't seem that salty to me. So there is, you think some, there that actually is a thing, it sounds like.
I think there might be some feedback to that. And I mean, clearly, how much you dilute it is right. is going to be a little bit of a factor in that. But, you know, you asked about how to know how much to take. I think that sense of taste is a pretty good indicator. And I've noticed just with jujitsu, like I'll try going less. And some of the signs and symptoms that you get on low electrolytes is a brain fog, decreased fine motor skill and whatnot. And then you start getting cramping. Like for me, it's always toe cramps at jujitsu is the first thing that I get. And I've definitely noticed that if I go less sodium and I start getting like some toe cramps or something, when I go to drink the Element, all it tastes is sweet. Like there's not even a hint of saltiness to it mm-hmm. because I'm clearly in like a sodium deficient state. Once you start cramping, like you're really in a pretty sodium deficient state. Mm-hmm. And then I've noticed that when I've been really diligent and, you know, get my kind of pre-training electrolytes in, if I go to take a sip of it right before we start rolling, it'll taste pretty salty. Mm-hmm. And so I've noticed kind of both, and I'm diluting it the exact same amount, you know, each time. So I think there is something to that. But again, for like the really evidence-based folks out there, I don't have any science to support that. I haven't been able to find anything you know, research wise that supports that. But I've seen a lot of folks that report this. And if you really overdo electrolytes, usually the main problem is disaster pants. Like you will get the trots. And so it is kind of self-limiting that way.
Yeah. Well, so I'm like, oh, well, you know, I mean, who knows? I'm like, well, how much did you put it in? I typically will reduce the amount that I mean, first of all, I'm a miser of the stuff, right? I use it a lot, but also, you know, I want to always make sure I have a fully loaded closet. So I'm not going to do more than I need to, right?
Right.
So I always do a whole packet in a gallon as a baseline for the day. And I'm like, so I tell them, I'm like, that gives it a great taste, right? So you're encouraged to drink it, but it's not so salty. But now I'm listening to you and I'm like, oh, well, maybe it's salty for the people that don't necessarily need it as much. But but yeah, and then pre-workout. So a lot of people spend all this money on these fancy nitric oxide boosters and pre-workouts when really, if you toss a whole packet of LMNT in your little shaker cup and you drink that during your workout, you're going to get probably even more of an epic pump than you do with some of these pre-workouts out there. So I personally use LMNT as a pre-workout more than anything, because the only thing I will say is I do like beta alanine. Sometimes it's fun to get that tingle. And so I will also dump that in with my LMNT as well, but it mixes well with other things and it is a fantastic pre-workout.
It really is. But you know, if people are skeptical or they're on a budget, pickle juice is amazing. It's a little bit difficult because you don't know exactly how much sodium is in the pickle juice. And this has to be like legit dill pickles, not the stuff that is like half sugar, you know, to avoid that. And then drinkelement.com/homebrew. We still have the recipe for making it yourself. What people find, though, is that although Element isn't cheap, when you do like rip, pour, drink, and it tastes really good. Like the homebrew tastes good, but it's just, I just throw it out there. Like if somebody's really on a budget, if they ran out or, you know, whatever, pickle juice or homebrew is a great option. And that is also a great way to just kick the tires on this. You're like, I don't know, maybe I need electrolytes, maybe I don't. That's a way to not spend, you know, much additional money to be able to get in and just check it out and see if you really benefit from that increased sodium intake.
Well, the funny part is we did a big powerlifting meet in the beginning of November, and you guys sent us a bunch of stuff for all the athletes and stuff
Right. Yeah.
Yep. And now at the gym, I have all these people that were local competitors. They're like, I need to get some more of that. That was awesome. I'm so glad that you did that. Thank you. You know? And I was like, oh, just, it's them. I said, go talk to them because it's amazing. Right. So it was really cool. Everybody was really excited about that. It was a huge hit. So thank you guys for that as well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, it's like any good drug dealer, the first one's free and then they're hooked.
That's the problem, right?
Yeah.
I love it though. That's great. So, well, is there any other things that you think are important to add to this conversation, Rob?
Man, mainly just encouraging people to kick tires on this stuff, you know, and there's nothing magic about Element other than I really think that most electrolyte formulas are way underpowered in sodium. I can't tell you how many people have told us you've got it backwards. You need more potassium. I'm like, I'm the biochemist, just back down here. Like I get where they're coming from, but they're missing a lot of the nuance on this stuff. I don't think most people appreciate, particularly really active and when people are eating clean, 85% of the sodium that Americans consume is from processed foods. Mm-hmm. I don't think hardly anybody is really advocating for eating processed foods. And when people shift to a minimally processed food diet, their sodium intake plummets, their carbohydrate, even if they're eating a higher carb diet, their glycemic load decreases. So their insulin load is going to decrease, which means they're not going to retain sodium. If you eat a pretty clean diet and you exercise, you probably need more sodium. And it's one of these just, it is such low hanging fruit. Again, pickle juice. Like if you don't want to get Element, just pickle juice, fuck, whatever, you know, but you won't sleep properly. You won't recover properly. you will have suboptimal performance. I mean, there's just all this stuff, and your potential for like cardiac arrhythmias, like left ventricular fibrillation and stuff like that, AFib also are increased when you're in a low sodium environment. Mm-hmm. Now, that said, I understand that only 7% of Americans are metabolically healthy. Most people are insulin resistant. And this is kind of an interesting thing. Like as Element grows, we're kind of getting out into the mainstream. And it's kind of like, well, if you're insulin resistant and overweight, you probably don't need this. But gee whiz, we recommend a minimally processed whole food diet. And when you adopt that, then you do need something like this, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think just being aware, like if you have some insulin resistance, you probably don't need to supplement or supplement as aggressively. But if you're metabolically healthy, lean, active, I co-founded this goddamn company, and I can't tell you how many days I will be like grumbly and irritated. My wife will be like, how much electrolytes have you had today? Like, God damn you, wife. You know, and then I'll literally go mix something up and drink it. And I feel better immediately. And that's part of the reason why we've had the success that we've had. Like creatine is awesome. Everybody knows creatine is awesome, but
it's a steroid, isn't it?
yeah, totally. You know, but it's subtle. It's like if you miss a day, you maybe notice it, you don't notice it. You know, there are some people who are really good responders. But if you are deficient in sodium, deficient in electrolytes, and you consume some, 10 minutes later, you feel better. And I would say like 80 or 90% of like that mid-afternoon slump where you feel like you need another cup of coffee, you probably just need some electrolytes. I would, you know, like energy drinks. Caffeine doesn't provide energy. It blocks our brain from sensing adenine, which is a molecule that accumulates the longer we are awake, and it sends a signal for us to start getting sleepy. But when you think about actual energy production is sodium potassium pumps. Mm-hmm. So if you're feeling tired, you're feeling knackered, you probably need some more sodium, you know, and again, but I've so emphasized the sodium part. We do put potassium is super important. Magnesium is really important, but I'm operating from the assumption that people are eating a mainly whole food, minimally processed diet, which generally provides almost all of the potassium they need, most of the magnesium they need. And that's why we have the different ratios. We have a gram of sodium in Element, 200 milligrams of potassium, 60 milligrams of magnesium. So I'm not saying that those things aren't important, but I'm operating with the assumption that you're eating a minimally processed whole food diet. And that's why I'm not beating that drum so hard. The sodium mm-hmm. is still the thing, especially if you're eating a minimally processed whole food diet. You're just not eating food that's got a lot of salt in it. So you have to figure out some way to add that to it. Yeah.
Well, and that's a whole nother, I mean, we could go down rabbit holes for hours on electrolyte imbalance, right? But like, think of how many people have chronic headaches. They don't drink enough water. They also aren't getting enough sodium. Or you just mentioned that mid-afternoon slump. Well, I've noticed, especially in females, but also males, how many people are running around with adrenal issues and way more stress than they need to be handling in the first place? This country is so stress dominant, the lifestyles we live in. We don't know it, but we're looking at social media, and that is eliciting a stress response. Whether we like it or not, we may think we're doing it to chill out, but we're really not. And all of that stress is also burning up our electrolytes in a sense, right? Because cortisol, all those things. So a lot of times that mid-afternoon slump, like you said, it's not necessarily a slump. Like, we are depleted of something that we need. Yep. And typically it's not caffeine.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So. And again, the cool thing about this, if I'm full of shit, like kick the tires on it, you're like, no, it didn't work for me. But what we find is if people try this, they look, feel, and perform better immediately. Like mm-hmm. And that feedback loop is immediate. It's like 5 minutes, you feel better, your performance is better, your sleep improves immediately. And then if you deviate away from it, you're like, oh, I'm feeling like garbage because I didn't have my pickle juice. I didn't have my Element or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's easily fixed. So it's cool in that regard that it's not subtle. Like, everybody knows that whey protein is fantastic for like post-workout recovery, and it improves glutathione status, and it's got all these laudable things, but it's not like if you didn't have a whey protein shake, like, are you going to immediately notice it that minute? You know, it's something that really accumulates over the long haul. Whereas addressing electrolyte deficiencies, you feel it and you notice it immediately. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that's another thing, right? You've got so many brands and companies out there doing the electrolyte game, but looking at the ingredients is another huge thing. You've got so many people with GI issues these days. And so you've got artificial sweeteners in there, which you guys don't have that. You've got, like, there's one right now. I work at a little supplement store a couple hours a week. And it's great to get me out of my house because otherwise I wouldn't leave.
Right.
And I meet a lot of people there and it's great, but, like, they have an electrolyte there that's just full of sucralose. And I'm thinking all these people have terrible GI health and then they're throwing that at it. And it's like, I mean, this product is nice and clean and it makes me happy to recommend it to my clients and anybody else, because I know that I'm not adding to the list of problems we're already trying to work on.
Right.
So good, clean ingredients.
Yeah. I mean, we do use stevia and some people are super, pant twisted about stevia, but we looked at stevia, we looked at monk fruit, we looked at allulose, and all of them have pluses and minuses. And when we looked at the flavor profile we could produce and then the relative risk reward story, we felt like stevia was kind of it tasted the best, had the lowest risk reward profile, and we have a raw unflavored, and we have the recipe for how to home brew it. So if mm-hmm. you want a different sweetener, you can do it yourself, but that's the reason why we went down that road. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fantastic choice and I'm happy that that's what you guys are doing and I have access to it. Cool. Well, Rob, this has been awesome conversation. I'm hoping my listeners come out enlightened from it. How can they find you if they want to find you?
RobWolf.com. And then I do a lot of writing for Element, which is drinkelement.com. And we just redid our kind of science landing page where we look not just at electrolytes, but fasting, intermittent fasting, low carb diets, general athletic performance. We've really been producing a ton of material around different areas, but those are kind of the two places I hang out.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'll send people your way and I'll continue to tout your product, and I will put all of the information on how to find it in the show notes as well.
Awesome. Well, it's great connecting with you again.
Yeah, hopefully we'll do it again soon. I mean, we could make it a more than a yearly thing because you always have great things to talk about, and I love that. So it was awesome having you on today.
Good to see you.
Thanks for tuning in. To learn more about me, my online programs, or to inquire about coaching, please visit www.connienightingale.com. And remember, nothing in the contents of this show is intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any illness, and it is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult with your primary care physician before implementing any new health protocols.